Well, good morning to all of you. It really is a pleasure to be here, and just want to greet you in Jesus' name this morning. Today is Father's Day, as we already have heard, a day in our country when we recognize fathers and their role in our families and their role in our society. And I want to give tribute to the fathers that are here today. Your task is not for the tolerant, but neither is it for the hot-tempered. It's not for the lazy, but then neither is it for the workaholic. Instead, the role of fathers is for the men who are truly astute. They're visionary. They're compassionate and gentle. They are spiritually sensitive. Fathers must be a friend. They need to be a counselor. They need to be a disciplinarian. They need to be purposeful leaders. They also need to be teachers. They need to be role models. Most importantly, they need to be men who are dependent on God for all they need. And so I just want to take this moment to honor the fathers here this morning and bless you for taking your role seriously. I had initially planned to preach to fathers because I'm one and thought I probably needed to hear a message. Actually, I'm pretty certain I need to hear one. But through several conversations I've had recently that brought to the surface a burden that has been on my heart for some time, mainly because of my own experiences, I decided to talk instead about handling stress in a stressful world. Handling stress in a stressful world. Several months ago, I spoke about work and rest. Work and rest. Noting the honor and the dignity that God has given to work and the rhythms that He set up from the creation of the world, which allow us to work with purpose and to work with vigor, and in the process to avoid negative stresses on our lives, to avoid burnout. Today I would like to look in more detail at how a Christian can live without negative stress points that very easily rob us of our joy and our effectiveness as a Christian. Stress is not all negative. While it probably wouldn't be necessary in a perfect world, as you know, we don't live in a perfect world, so stress helps us get done what needs to be done in a timely manner. And we all know the stress of deadlines, the stress of people's expectations, and that helps us get work done. You know, without the stress of meeting those deadlines, without the stress of fulfilling people's expectations, without the stress that's accompanied by the knowledge that we need to avoid a catastrophe of some type, we would tend to be lazy, or we would tend not to care enough about what people think of us. And we may get ourselves into some very dangerous situations. And so stress is simply our body's reaction to the circumstances that we bring ourselves into in life. It's our body's natural way of coping with difficulties. So stress is not a bad thing. It's something that is useful. However, for some people, stresses spiral out of control. They hinder their success at work. Stresses stifle meaningful relationships, or can even take away your ability to function properly. Stress in this sense is clearly negative, and it must be managed with healthy thought patterns, with a wholesome lifestyle, and a deepening trust in God who has created us in the first place. So today I want to look at First of all, the causes, some typical causes of stress. I want to then look at some practical ways to deal with these stresses. And then I want to look at, more specifically, what foundationally, what brings true peace? The title today is Finding Rest in a Troubled World. Finding Rest in a Troubled World. It's easy to see that we are in a world of trouble. Or maybe we would just say we're in a troubled world. But we are in a world of trouble. This trouble naturally brings us a negative stress into our lives. And there are lots of sources of stress. I hope you don't get stressed out by me reading down the list. There are so many demanding situations. There are negative or demanding relationships. Families are a wonderful thing, but we can all identify pretty quickly, I suppose, with relationships that have been quite demanding. My family probably won't disown me if I squeal on us a little bit. I was just thinking about our last family get-together and how a very active conversation kind of degenerated into what was clearly differences of opinions that were held fairly strongly and a good bit of, either discussion or argument, whichever way you wanted to hear it. And frankly, it was disruptive. Suddenly, I think we all realized that we were being more abrasive than what we had meant to be. And I'm happy to say there were some apologies. There were a few tears as we realized we weren't doing. We weren't relating to each other the way we wanted to. But those can be stresses. Fathers tend to not relate well to their sons. Daughters and mothers have points of conflict. There's workplace stresses. And this can be somebody with a negative attitude. And they just bring lots of different comments that show that they're disgruntled about things. And the stresses of the day wear down on us. And over a period of time, this can be very, very draining. There are also manipulative relationships that we can enter into, a lot of times in goodwill. We try to help people because they're clearly needy and we have something to offer. And so we come to them trying to give what they need in the relationship. And oftentimes, that desire to help these people can be misguided, thinking sometimes, even though we may not admit it at the moment, thinking that we are the Good Samaritan arriving on the scene to be able to help this person. And what we realize over a period of time is that we are not the answer to the situation. But in that process, the relationship can become very manipulative and can be very difficult to get out of because we feel responsible, we feel obligated to bring something that will be helpful. Manipulative relationships can, on the long term, if there's no outside help or outside direction, can be draining and can lead to burnout and mental breakdown. There are stresses as we look around and see people that are close to us who have lost the faith. They don't value what they have grown up valuing. They don't honor God. There are young people that may not be following what they've been taught. There are middle-aged people who are questioning the very foundations of the Christian faith. That can be stressing. There are sicknesses. There are terminal illnesses. There are people who care day in and day out for loved ones who are suffering. In the long term, these can be incredibly stressful and bring pressure points on relationships that we are almost unable to handle. There are traumatic injuries. And medical personnel have a term for this, or emergency personnel. It's just the trauma, the burnout that goes with EMTs, or people who see a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of tragedy, and in some cases are not able to handle it. So there are a lot of demanding situations. Let's talk about some more stresses. Some of these we bring on ourselves, and I'm going to call these poor habits. They are poor habits. One is not knowing your limits and saying no. This can happen in work. This can happen, as I said, in relationships, particularly those that are demanding and manipulative. This can happen in our work habits. We can procrastinate, push off what we know needs to be done, and that stresses us because we know, for starters, that we're not doing what we should be doing. In addition, having the knowledge that this task that needs to be done is not completed is continually draining us, because that task is continually worked through in our mind as we think about how we should be doing it. And, you know, we say we can multitask. Well, that's why we can be doing the job that we should be doing in our mind while we're completing many other things. So it's a drain. Procrastination is a drain. Not dealing with difficult situations is related to procrastination, but I isolate it here because I think all of us struggle, and in a church situation in particular, we struggle to talk to the people that we know we need to talk to. Let me back up a little bit. Let's say you're a parent and your children come home with a story about their friends who were throwing rocks at a little boy. I'm pulling in a theoretical story here so I don't get myself in trouble. But these kinds of things have happened. So they're throwing rocks, friends are throwing rocks at a little boy. Now, what is our response? You know, maybe we should have been, but we weren't on site to stop the little boy from throwing the rocks. Our children needed to relate to that situation, and we try to give them guidance about how they should have, what they should have done. So it goes something like this. Well, Johnny, what you should have done is throwing the rock back at him. No, I just said that to make sure you were awake. You should have told the boy not to do that. Okay. Or you should have taken his arm and pulled it back and not let him throw the rock. Or you should have come and told mom and daddy so we could come in, you know, so we can help them see how they could intervene in a bad situation. And children grow up with these. It's a very real situations. But my point simply being that it's difficult for a child to do that. It's incredible how much stamina is needed, how much security as a person is needed for a child to get up in front of his peers and say, that's wrong. Don't do that. I'm getting adult supervision in here. How many of your children just do that first response? Well, some of them may. But it's difficult for children. How difficult is it for us as adults? Very difficult. If we feel like we are going to be thought less of, if we feel like we're going to have conflict, if we address a certain situation, we will avoid it like the plague. I'm reminded of this in my teaching. A situation came up this last year where I realized I definitely needed to intervene, but I ignored it. And, you know, it's something that I kind of knew was going on, but I didn't want to take care of it. And, you know, part of it was, you know, just the question of knowing, is this really worth addressing? Finally, I knew it was worth addressing. It became very prominent. And the release that I felt when I addressed that showed me how much I was carrying with that particular situation that I hadn't been aware of. You see, that's how stresses are. They tend to add up on us. They grow on us. And we are many times naive to what is actually taking place. So dealing with difficult situations, being decisive about them. Let's keep on with these poor habits. Unhealthy eating practices provide stress. Unhealthy sleep habits provide stress. Lack of proper exercise. Then there are traumatic experiences like death, injury, a natural disaster, or war. There's a perfectionistic approach to life, which can cause incredible stress, but more on that later. Why worry about all this? You know, why are we stressing about stress? Well, we're going to try not to, actually. We are not created to fret and worry about life. Jesus came to bring peace, and he came to bring joy to our lives so that we're able to reach out to other people and be effective in our families, be effective in relationship with husband or wife, be effective in our churches. We're not created to be bound by fear, anxiety, or anger and bitterness, which wraps us up in ourselves. That's not who we are. We want to bring hope and rest to the rest of the world. When we allow stress and worry and anxiety or anger to control our lives, not only do we lose this quality of life, but we also bring pain to those closest to us, and we are not able to provide for them. It's like we're clasping tightly this energy that could be used for other people. Instead, we need it all on our own in order to survive. And we may not even be able to articulate all that in the moment. But it's like we take it all in. We're just barreling ahead, trying to stay above water. Many times the stress levels build up over time, and particularly high achievers are oblivious to the telltale signs that they are living a lifestyle that is physically and mentally unsustainable. Physically and mentally unsustainable. So what is the answer to this problem? At this point, I'd like to give a number of practical pointers for avoiding undue stress and burnout so that we can live whole, productive, and meaningful lives as God has created us for. How do we avoid stress? I have a number of points here that I want to go down through, and a lot of this can be found on any book that has to do with stress management, I suppose. But I think there are many, many issues that I really didn't think about or I wasn't aware of. And understanding some of this has helped me in my own life. First of all, reduce work stress. Reduce work stress. Well, we might say, if you love what you do, what's the stress? And you know, there's a sense when you do love what you're doing, that is a big answer, actually. We're getting to the answer really fast here if we say love what we're doing. But there are many points of stress that are associated with our work. And here in America, especially, we deal with this. In the article Burnout, The Disease of Our Civilization by Arianna Huffington, she wrote in 2013 about a third metric. She talks about a third metric, which she explains as simply looking at the world with another lens. She writes this article as a business executive, I believe, but she's involved in business and particularly in the technology sector. She says she would like to dispel the myth, and I quote, that there is a trade-off between high performance and taking care of ourselves. There's a trade-off between high performance and taking care of ourselves. And she's saying that in business, generally we think the bottom line or the amount of money that we make, that will be sacrificed if we take care of our workers or if our CEOs, the people in the head of the business, are going to be taking time for personal refreshment and rejuvenation. And she quotes study after study that shows that is, in fact, not the case. And actually, one study shows that 1/4 of American businesses are allotting significant amounts of resources to caring for their employees. And I'm not advocating yoga here. Yoga is generally a good part of what their recommendations are. However, one of the things that I think those businesses are reaching for in advocating yoga is they're reaching for a time, a space, a reflective moment, a time for meditation and thinking about who we should be. And as a Christian, that's precisely what we should be doing. Our end should not be some being that we move to, we're not Buddhist. The end should be God and relationship with Him instead. But we need to set aside time to find that reflection, reflective moment. But let me continue here. Other ways they work with this is they provide natural lighting in their workspaces, lounges and cafes. They might offer meditation classes, like I mentioned. And companies are seeing the economic benefit of helping their workers to manage adequately their stress levels. So what I want to say by this point is simply that I think we are also, in our business world, not just in business, but any organization that we're involved with. So for me, I'm teaching school, and I'll be frank, I don't have my nose to the paycheck as a teacher. There are other motivations for being a teacher. Mostly they are, if you want to be, I think the pitfall for a lot of teachers is being people pleasers. And not always. It just depends on your personality. But I think that can be how you gear your energy as a teacher. And so that can be the motivation for why you get up in the morning. And obviously it's a bad motivation. We begin to think that our success, let's say, as a teacher, our success can be directly connected to how hard we work, directly connected to how much energy we put into this, directly connected to how much education you get, directly connected to what techniques you learn. Well, it is connected to all those things in some way, but the point that is being made in the business world is that if you don't take time for yourself, you get reach the place where you aren't able to reach out to other people. You're not effective. In other words, you lose your effectiveness. So what should you do about work stress? Well, what about cutting the number of hours you work? Cut out work situations that are stressful. If a certain type of environment is providing a lot of stress to you and you realize that over a period of time, you may need to think seriously about changing jobs or at least finding a way to relate in wholesome ways to that stress. What's another way to reduce work stress? Well, don't overcommit. Many of us have trouble with this. And we think very quickly, yes, I can do that. I can do that. And don't adequately assess the amount of energy, the amount of time, the amount of resources needed to complete that job successfully. Be humble enough to say you cannot handle the additional work. I'm currently saying no to a number of my responsibilities for this very reason. And I don't know always if I'm doing the right thing. But at the heart of those decisions is simply a realization that I'm finite. I won't reach around to everybody. And you won't either. So number two, we just talked about reducing work stress. Let's use time wisely. I'm going to talk about a number of ways to use time wisely. I already mentioned not procrastinating. Be decisive. Get difficult jobs out of the way. Children, you're in school. Get that grammar done first, or write that essay, or do the hard jobs first of all. This is for parents. Have your child eat those green beans first. You're teaching him a life skill. Green beans, then the strawberry pie. Yum, yum. All right. Adults, as I mentioned, have that difficult conversation first. Another way to use time wisely, and I want to bring in technology here. Be aware that time-saving devices are not always time-saving. I read also in this article, Burnout, the Disease of Our Civilization. Arianna Huffington says that smartphone users on the average check their phone every 6.5 minutes for a total of 150 times per day. That's an obsession. And I think we just need to admit it. We just need to admit it that some of us are obsessed with technology. We need to become unconnected so that we can reconnect. Become unconnected so that we can reconnect with things that carry more value than the things we can access very quickly. Constant connection to social media and the internet takes time. It also takes relational energy that could be channeled more productively into interactions with those who are close to us and actually most important. I mean, 250 friends on Facebook might be nice, and I'm not discrediting those friendships. What I am saying is that we need to think clearly, put life into perspective, and say, how much time and energy am I putting into those friends whom I cannot see versus the friends that are right around me, which would be family and church? What is the corresponding amount of energy? And, of course, energy to the virtual world, realistically, should be much less than energy to real-life people that we have sitting right beside us. How many of you think how quickly a group of friends can move from conversation with each other to looking at their phones? I think of this whenever I go to a restaurant. You'll see a group of young people. They went out to eat with each other and hang out, have a good time. What are they doing? They're all sitting around the table on their phones. Now, I understand. They are with each other. They're feeling physical presence beside them, I suppose. But their level of communication has dropped significantly because their primary focus is the phone, not each other. So I know in the old days, families sit around and read a book. Well, we could all be in their living room all reading our own book and in our own world. So this is not a new phenomenon, right, that we're all on smartphones. Well, yes and no. The living room scenario didn't happen as often. It was less accessible and less quick. We didn't haul books with us. You know, had pockets all full of books and we go. You know, it wasn't that kind of thing. But with access to all of this at your fingertip, we can bring in whatever we want, whenever we want it, however we want it, right away. It's just immediate access. And as we move into that kind of lifestyle with our eyes shut, which I think a lot of us do, I mean, I think I do, we will adopt a lifestyle. It will be a paradigm shift, and we'll look back in a generation and wonder what in the world we were thinking. Let's think now and think about how we can move purposefully through some of these shifts as we interact with technology. I'm actually kind of alarmed as I realize that conversation is now considered somewhat abnormal. And think about sitting in a room with people and they're on their phones. You can't talk to them. Or meeting somebody on the sidewalk. I'll admit that I've kind of taken this approach. If somebody's on the sidewalk, I will sort of look away because I'm probably guilty of what I'm talking about here. I'm not as used to talking to people and saying, "Hi, how are you?" They aren't used to it either. You know, they're on their phone. They're going somewhere or they're texting. By the way, that can be really dangerous. Texting and walking on the street. We need to be unplugging occasionally to be able to reconnect with what is transcendent and reflect on God's purposes for our lives rather than only conscious of our frantic pace of living. So I've covered two things here, stress at work, poor habits, using time wisely. Next, I'd like to talk about connecting deeply with other people. Having a few good friends that we regularly share with deeply helps us to identify patterns of living that are counterproductive and are damaging to us. We are meant to connect with people, by the way, so I'm not against social things. When we connect deeply, it gives us a freedom as we confess sin in our lives, and it also gives us humility as we ask for direction and accountability. Solid relationships give us security and stability. Doesn't it feel so good to know that somebody knows you, and they know you well, and they can give feedback into your life? They're going to tell you if you're doing something that's wrong or that's going to get you in trouble. It feels good. So it's security, it's stability in your life if you have meaningful relationships. You're going to find it difficult to get those relationships in your virtual world. It will have to be people that you know and trust and can be with you and see you. Try clocking your time for 1 week. Log all your time on social media. Log all your time checking your email. Log all your time watching some silly video. It could reveal a lifestyle that is stealing your energy for connecting on a deeper level with other people. So connect deeply with others. Next, I'd like to say we need to prioritize. Yesterday, I took the time to list out the roles that I carry. I should have done this 10 years ago. In big letters across the page, actually I got this inspiration from Daryl. I'm just realizing as I talk. I wrote child of God in big letters across the page because that's who I am primarily. And I want to keep that in my mind. And then next in size was husband. My wife was really happy to see that. And then I had father. That was a little smaller because I'm realizing that if I'm not a good husband, I probably won't be a good father. And then smaller letters, believe it or not, I had teacher and pastor, and then somewhere down there was brother and son because I have family, and I could have gotten more technical with that, but that wasn't the point. The point was reminding myself who I am primarily, because if I find myself putting 95% of my time into teaching, for example, when that is actually low on the list of who I am primarily, or what my role is primarily, then it's a problem. Now, granted, I can be a child of God and a teacher, right? So there's a lot of overlap, but prioritizing is the point here. We need to know and be convinced which one is on the top, which one falls on the bottom, and where everything goes in between. If I am teaching, I can be the best teacher. I can be a sought-after speaker. I can be somebody who is considered wise, and I've been on so many different committees. But if I can't talk to my son and daughter, if I can't give them advice, what in the world is that for? If I come home at the end of the day and I realize, you know what, I'm not sure what my children have been doing. This week has gone by. What in the world have they been doing? Okay. I'm primarily a father, and I need to take that. So prioritization is going to be different for every person, but you have to prioritize. That will bring on stress when you are living a life that doesn't align with priorities that you should be aligning with, because we know down deep that we're not doing what we should be doing when we should be doing it. We need to take time off to do this. Take a day, take half a day, ask your wife, ask your friends how you're doing on this. Next point, live healthily. And I want to say, get exercise, get sleep, get good food, get routine. Get exercise. Now for me, I know I can easily move into an inactive lifestyle, and that's partly because of my job. Some of you won't have that problem. But for me, I'm going to have to spend time thinking about how I will get the exercise I need. If you're under stress, your body puts off, your adrenaline kicks in, I could say it that way. And basically what's happening, not that I'm a nurse, but the blood flow is directed to your muscle groups because your body is triggering automatically this flight and fight response, we call it. And so if you are constantly under a lot of stress, your muscles are constantly ready to go, get, do things. Imagine how tired you could get by the end of the day if you've been in a stressful situation for 12 hours. You know, it's no wonder muscles are aching that you had no idea you used. So that's what's happening physically. Our bodies become tense with no way to get rid of that extra energy. One way to do it is exercise. It's therapeutic. Get some sleep. Go to bed when it's time to go to bed. Wake up when it's time to wake up. And if you have trouble with insomnia, try getting up early in the morning. Do that for about 2 or 3 days in a row, and you'll go to bed at night, much more likely to, at least. Stressing over a task that needs to be done or a relationship that's traumatic can keep us awake and can wake us up in the middle of the night, and then the next day we're less capable as we go about work that needs to be done. It's well known that our bodies rejuvenate while we rest. While we can get by with 4 to 6 hours a night for a period of time, it's not good for any of our bodies. And I do remember growing up hearing people kind of talk about how they put in these short nights, long hours, and sort of talking about it in a way that was glorifying it. Or somebody was on no-doze. That was the caffeine pill when I was a little boy. No-doze, and they could drive truck for 48 hours straight. What's the point? Well, not much, except that you could say I did it for 48 hours straight. It's not good for your body. And so those kinds of things over time will take their toll on our bodies, and it's not taking care of them. Let's eat well. Sugary, fatty, and salty foods give us a high, but afterwards we have a fallout, making us less productive because we're so lethargic. Highly caffeinated drinks make us more apt to have heart palpitations and or anxiety. They can keep us awake and deny us a restful night of sleep. I do drink coffee, by the way. And then develop routines. They bring stability in your life. Bedtimes, rising times, times for reading scripture and praying. You know, I work in Harrisonburg, and I'm realizing I've done it often enough. That's actually, the driving is actually a routine that I've come to, that's come to be a place where I can kind of relax, coming and going. I still don't like supporting BP that much. And it, sometimes it still feels like my time's wasted. But I'm just, what I'm trying to point out here is that it is a routine. And that the fact that I have a routine there, it just feels right when I get on the road and heading down the interstate. Routines can bring stability and strength to us. So develop meaningful routines. Time where you're going to set aside reflection, meditation, prayer, scripture reading. Jesus spent the night in prayer. Jesus took disciples away from people for a time of rejuvenation. What in the world do we think when we have the temptation to skip those things? Regularly read from a good book. Take time to sit down to meals. Relax a little bit afterwards. And by all means, don't gobble that food. Enjoy the bites. You'll take fewer of them, which is probably a good thing in our society. And maybe even more is that you will actually be able to digest the food better. The relaxation, finding meaning in the small things, that's a part of, I think, being a child of God. So live healthily. Next, I'd like to say, and this is for me, take yourself less seriously. This spring, I sat down and wrote some goals out for my life. And again, I should have done this 10 years ago, but one of the things I put down was, I want to take myself less seriously. I want to laugh more. I want to joke a little more. Because I'm sorry, I'm just not quite that personality. But I need to have more of those kinds of things. I need to be a lighthearted a little more often. Life is serious. But if it's so serious that it takes away your ability to serve other people, that's too serious. I think Jesus, while life was very serious for him and his mission here on earth was very focused, he was able to bring wholeness and peace to people because he understood this. So realize that you're not irreplaceable. I think I said this here before, but I'll say it again because it fits here. I remember distinctly thinking one day that, you know, the world will continue to go on if I would not exist. I mean, that wasn't a morbid thought. I was just realizing, you know, I'm needed. I think I'm needed. I feel needed. But I saw other people who died, and life continued. Why would I expect something different if something happened to me? My only point being that I think we assign ourselves too much responsibility sometimes, at least some of us, and we believe that we are the change-all. We are the kind of where it lies, or we can have a little bit of that sense. Practice thinking of others rather than yourself. Practice giving to others. Don't allow yourself to be so introspective. I'm talking to myself here throughout all of this, but especially here. I've got a problem with this, I know. It comes after teaching a lesson at school. It comes after speaking in public. It comes after a school program or any time when I've been in a public eye and I know people have watched what I've done. It could even be something simple. Maybe I'm running a little a mini excavator and somebody who's experienced comes by and sees me, you know, knock something out or, you know, that kind of thing. You can go back and and analyze and evaluate your performance. Now, while this is very helpful to analyze and evaluate your performance, an obsession with looking inward, being introspective, is selfish and can plunge us into depression and anxiety if we feel we don't measure up to our standards or the expectations of other people. It's actually an inverted pride, and we know that. It can also make us proud and haughty, which tends to distance us from people because people sense that attitude, and those are the people we should be connecting deeply with. And so we kind of hurt ourselves in that way as well. While I've given a number of things for us to do in order to live a vibrant and meaningful life, Christians throughout time have had the answer to this dilemma all along. And here I want to take us to the scriptures. Go to Matthew 9, verse 2. And I'm going to be looking through several scriptures here that help us to understand how Jesus and the Apostle Paul related to difficult situations. Matthew 9:2 tells us about a man who could have been weighed down with depression because of his circumstances. He was sick with palsy, which was a disease of paralysis. He needed men to bring him to Jesus on a bed. But I'd like us to notice Jesus' words to him, because Jesus met a need that was so much deeper than his physical need. He forgave his sins. And having that knowledge would give this man the ability to move beyond any depression, to move beyond any sadness that he had about his disease. Chapter 9, and he entered into a ship and passed over and came into his own city. And behold, they brought to him a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee. And behold, certain of the scribes said within themselves, This man blasphemeth. And Jesus, knowing their thoughts, said, Wherefore think ye evil in your hearts? Whether it is easy to say, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise and walk. But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, then saith he to the sick of the palsy, Arise, take thy bed, and go into thine house. I'm going to move quickly to another one, Matthew 14:27. Here, Jesus is telling the disciples, when he is walking on the water, he's telling them to be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. The point here is that Jesus was the focus. As the disciples looked at Jesus, who controlled the wind, controlled the water, controlled their fate, and they depended on him, they were brought peace. Don't be afraid. Let's go to John 16:33. John 16:33. These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. Jesus is telling his disciples here that although you don't know the future, I do. And if you trust me, I will give you peace. We can look in Acts, a couple places where Paul is afraid of physical danger. He had been saved from a riot by the Roman soldiers. The Lord stood by him during the night, Luke writes, and told him, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness of me in Rome." So here we have God speaking to Paul. God speaks to us. When we take the time to listen, take the time to reflect, take the time to meditate, God talks to us. And that brings clarity. That brings peace. It brings rest as we trust in Him. I'd like to turn to the book of Philippians. I'm just going to have you look at that while I make a few comments on this passage. I titled Philippians 4. I titled it, "Paul Speaks of His Stress Management Program." That was just to make it fit into the message. I really think he hits some very key elements here. Look at verse 4 and 5. "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Let your moderation or gentleness and reasonableness be known to all men, the Lord is at hand," or He's close. Rejoicing and giving to others are tonics for stress. Go on down. Verses 6 and 7 are classic. "Be careful for nothing," or another translation, "don't worry about anything. But in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving," notice the attitude, "let your requests be made known unto God." And then what will happen? "The peace of God, which is beyond our understanding, will keep our hearts." It'll give security, stability to our hearts and our minds. I remember the feeling that I was losing my mind. I was afraid and ashamed to talk to anybody about it. But I want to say the peace and the release that came to me as I shared this with other people and realized that God had this under control, that was life-changing. I began to live basking in God's care, knowing that ultimately I was unable to control the destiny of my life. Now, I know, yes, I have choices, but to my best efforts, I still wouldn't be able to manage the outcome. And I became grateful for God's care and keeping. And I'm reminded of the hymn, "Keep me till thou wilt call me hence, where never night can be. And save me, Lord, for Jesus' sake. He shed his blood for me." And that comes from my "Oh, the Lord, a Morning Song" by Amos Herr. And I'll say, I don't know that I've said it here, but my mother-in-law sang that verse 7 times the day before she passed away. And I've thought of that differently ever since, about the expression of faith that's in that line. And that's what it is. You know, it's faith. It's trust. In the end, you and I, we can't preserve ourselves. We can't even keep some of the things that we really worry about. We can't keep them from happening. We have to trust. Reminds me of the hymn, "Peace, Perfect Peace." In this, well, let me back up. Each of these verses states a question and then responds with an answer. Peace, perfect peace in this dark world of sin? What's the answer? The blood of Jesus whispers peace within. So it's been Christ's sacrifice. That means we don't have to be guilty for sin. peace, perfect peace by thronging, duties pressed. You know, we may feel like we don't have the resources to get done what needs to be done. You may be a mother. You may be a father who wishes you could communicate better with your children. There can be any number of duties. Well, to do the will of Jesus, this is rest. But back to prioritization. If we do the right thing at the right time, there's so much peace in that. Peace, perfect peace, death shadowing us and ours. Jesus has vanquished death and all its powers. Peace, perfect peace, our future all unknown. Jesus we know. Future unknown, but we know Jesus. And he's on the throne. He's in control. It's enough. Earth's struggles soon shall cease. And Jesus call us to heaven's perfect peace. While this fast-paced world we live in gives us many opportunities to stress, to fall into depression, to become anxious and fearful, we don't need to live in bondage to these negative life patterns. We must identify the stresses that are dominating our lives and admit our problem. We need to make the necessary lifestyle changes in order to live a vibrant and wholesome life that can be of service to God. Many times we are responsible for these stresses that we bring on ourselves. When we lose sleep, we eat poorly, we overcommit, we turn inward in our thinking, we procrastinate, we refuse to connect deeply with others. The life of service we're intended to live was modeled by Jesus and the Apostle Paul. Both were able to reach out to other people because they followed these principles and lifestyle patterns that fostered a dependence on God and a love for what is true and right, and gratefulness to God and other people. So my encouragement is to be quick to recognize these signs of stress. Let's be willing to make the hard choices so that we have a lifestyle that is sustainable in this fast-paced world, a lifestyle that honors God by service to Him that's effective, and that demonstrates to all people that are watching values that are rooted in what is real and true. Let's stand for prayer. Father, thank you that you teach us, no matter what stage we are in life, there are always things to learn. We learn by what other people tell us. We learn through your Spirit, through reading. We learn by experience, too. And I ask that you would help all of us to learn the lessons that are before us. In Jesus' name, amen.